remember, please, what Senator Hayes said when you're talking about this in future with whomever, that yes, we need Senate reform, but what is really needed is parliamentary reform.
Yes.
Thanks for that question. Anybody who wants to ask a question, you can move up and just, we would know how many people there are. And I think Peter McCormick, who is a specialist in the area of Senate reform, or on this topic, ought to say a sentence or two. Peter, come along. Come along. Peter's a friend of this gathering. He's spoken on critical issues for 20 years.
Okay, we've just finished hearing three intelligent, articulate people who care about the issues, who worked hard to be informed, and then who took the time to come and share it with us. Therefore, we're all feeling warmer thoughts about the Senate than we're accustomed to, but I think it's time for a corrective moment here. As when... okay, it's mine. Okay, my basic concern, though, is not the three individuals that spoke to us today. It's the institutional platform from which they're speaking, and that's the defect under our Constitution. Of our Senate, we would have to say what they always said about the House of Lords. Even its biggest defenders on even its best day have to admit if the thing wasn't there and we decided to create one, that isn't the one we create. I mean, we've got, our senators have the longest terms and the least political accountability tied with the House of Lords, maybe, of any upper chamber of the 73 in the world, so we're tied for 72nd. This is not much of a showing. So what I'd really like to do, I'd like to ask the senators, because I'd ask Senator Hayes, because he and I are the only two people here who think Constitution is an exciting word, so we may as well recognize that small brotherhood. I'd like to ask him, given that we don't have a real Senate, and again, with all respect to the three of you, we don't, what would a real Senate look like, and how on earth do you think we could possibly get closer to it in the foreseeable future?
Make it short.
It's not possible to do justice to that question in a short time, but I think just some things that I think are easy to say based on recent studies, hearings that we've just had, is that a modern Senate for Canada, and Senator Banks is right, the House of Commons would have to be looked at in a context of reform, would be one that would probably at the very least follow the German model of small, medium, and large in terms of the numbers of people who represent the provinces, because I think where we are today, the provinces are more the most logical focus rather than the original divisions. And of course, BC is anxious to become a division, which would entitle them to 24. And so anyway, small, medium, and large, elected by proportional representation, single transferable vote with open lists, so that you would have a truer reflection of the political disposition of the electorate at the time of an election, would have appropriate powers that wouldn't interfere in an unacceptable way with the dominant position that has always been the case in Canada that the House of Commons holds in our model of responsible government. What exactly that is, I'm not sure. So distribution of seats, powers, type of election, something in that order, I think is what most people would come up with if they thought about it for very long. Achieving it, however, is a very different story. And the political actors who have control over whether or not change occurs have had very little incentive to proceed with it, and when they have, it hasn't gone anywhere. So that is the big challenge we face. The thought of constituent assemblies, as BC has worked with, to motivate a reform, and the one I've described is just something off the cuff, but something that would be a more modern Senate for Canada is a possibility. But in the end, the people have to want it and push for it if it's ever going to really be realized.
Thank you. James, is your question on the Senate?
No.
Does anybody else want anything on the Senate? We'll move that way. Next question.
Gordon?
Yes.
Tom has an observation I'd like him to express to the group about 72 issues. And it has to do with the effectiveness.
Well, thank you. I'll try to be... I think Joyce also wants to talk about this. I mean, we could talk about this for days. But since the question was, as put as a corrective one,
I will respond just with an opinion. Senator Hayes just mentioned the incentive to the political players. One real incentive that we have to bear in mind is that notwithstanding the sophistry with which they address the question from time to time, the last people in the world in Canada who want to have an elected Senate are the premiers of our provinces. Because this is how much power there is. This is how much authority there is. And it's now divided up in a certain way. And when the Senate becomes elected, it is going inexorably to gain some more of that power. If it's elected, it's a quite different thing than the deference that it now pays. That power is going to come from somewhere. The other thing that I want to say in respect, I know what you meant by a real Senate. It is irrefutable that the Senate is the least, is absolutely and utterly undemocratic. It is, I think we're better in that respect than the House of Lords. We're less democratic than the House of Lords. Absolutely, irrefutably undemocratic. But we're real. And if we weren't real, I can tell you that the apoplexy into which successive governments in the short time that I have been there have gone into when we refuse to do some of the things that they want us to do would not have turned them purple with rage. And that will, I suspect, happen with succeeding governments as well, because the Senate is, that is the nature of the Senate. So in that respect, I can introduce you to several prime ministers who would be able to tell you that the Senate is very real indeed.
Are you aware that those words about democracy and the Senate are going to be in the Ottawa Citizen tomorrow morning?
Yes.
Totally. Any more on the Senate? Can we move on? James. James Moore.
Thank you. I'm just going to quote briefly from this paper here. This is actually directed to Senator Banks, who I think he said he sits on this committee. A Senate committee is urging the federal government to sign on to the U.S. missile defense program, asserting that opposition to the plan is based more on emotions than a rational analysis of the potential benefits. Now, I'm going to make a great effort here to give a rational analysis and not be emotional. In fact, even to put it in that form is an argumentum ad hominem. Normally, more frequently used as an argumentum ad feminine to dismiss your opposition before they even speak. And I'm very disappointed to see that, and see that as a quote from the committee. However, the U.S. missile defense program, for Canada to sign on, let's think very rationally for a few moments about that. The United States arbitrarily abrogated the Anti-Ballistic Missile Defense Treaty. The United States is operating under the Bush Doctrine, which is a doctrine of preemptive war. In other words, we'll attack first because we have the right and the power to do. The United States doesn't recognize the International Court of Justice. And I really tortures my mind trying to imagine what the potential benefit to Canada would be to acquiesce to this kind of behavior, this kind of international behavior, to give our credibility to the United States in this project. We know what's happened from this. We've seen Vladimir Putin talk about how dangerous this is, how parity is so important. We've seen the Chinese talking about how America wants to pick up a shield to go with its spears, where the whole world understood the benefit, if we can say it that way, of mutually assured destruction. So, this is a really dangerous move on the United States' part. It's going to increase the arms race. It's going to be very expensive, it's going to be very dangerous, it's going to be very frightening, and I would imagine that Canada should think very carefully and very seriously about not supporting it. I'd like a comment. Thank you.
Well, Canada did think very seriously about not supporting it, and Canada decided not to support it a long time ago when it was first invited to the table. The opinion that you've expressed that is in our present report, and in the report before that, and the report before that, and the report before that, is that that's a mistake. And I have to say that it's not correct to say that we arrived at that opinion without having asked people, because we never arrive at opinions without having asked people. We're dealing with the practical facts of Canada's interests. That's our job. Canada's national interest. The first thing to understand is that while it used to be a completely untested and wacko theory when President Reagan was talking about his Star Wars idea, the present missile shield system actually works. They can hit a bullet with a bullet. And the most recent tests have been more successful than unsuccessful. The question, as I said, that boils down to Canada's national interest. We have been, as a perfectly good, I think, corollary example, partners in NORAD since it was founded shortly after the Second World War. It has been a very effective means by which we join with the United States in the defense of North America. It has been quite effective. There was a Canadian officer, a general officer in charge on 9/11, and it was he who ordered the planes into the air, and I think we all know all those things. NORAD has worked very effectively. At the moment, the command and control of the missile defense system exists in NORAD headquarters in Colorado. And if we don't agree to be at the table, it won't be there anymore. It's going to move to a headquarters in Florida. So the question boils down to, in matters having to do with the missile defense system of North America, which is going to be there whether we like it or not, and is going to shoot at things over our heads whether we like it or not, should we be at the table? We have not been asked to spend any money, although I think we will be. We have not been asked to have any installations of any kind on our property, although I think we might be. But at the moment, all that's required is the flag. And it is our opinion, having considered the facts on all sides of the question, that we would be better off as a country in our national interest if we are at that table than not. And it's as simple as that.
Anybody else on that issue? Moving on then, Bella.
Evelyn Blatterstone. Thank you very much to all three senators who are here. We talk about a democratic deficit in Canada, in particular in Alberta. One way to overcome that democratic deficit is to have face-to-face contact with those who are representing us in Ottawa. So thank you for being here. I really appreciate it, Senator Manx, your point that there's environmental change happening irrespective of whether we know how it's, what is the precursor or whether it's a cycle or whatever. However, I would have to ask you a bit more about your concerns about water, because we talk about political will, and we know that there was some kind of political will when NAFTA was signed, which gave away our water to the U.S. There is some kind of political will when, in Alberta, our tar sands projects use up incredible amounts of water, which goes into the earth or goes into big holding ponds with polluted water. So why are we talking about rearranging the chairs on the Titanic and how much water we're using brushing our teeth when there's huge amounts of water that we're not even talking about? It's sort of like the elephant in the room. Let's not talk about the tar sands or NAFTA. So in Alberta, in particular, where most of our water goes to agriculture, the issue of depleting amounts of water is really going to affect us and affect Canada's agriculture. So I wonder what the Senate would say about that.
Thank you. Senator Hayes should really address this question, because there's a tradition in the Senate that the chairmanship and a lot of the membership of the Standing Committee on Energy, the Environment, and Natural Resources is an Albertan, has been for a very long time. Senator Hayes was its chair for a long time and wrote a very important and remarkably prescient report talking about emissions credit trading a long time ago, before anybody else had thought of it. He thought of it. And Senator Nick Taylor was the chair of this committee before I was. I didn't mean to suggest when I was talking about those water questions that any of them was more important than the other. They are all important. We have to address all of them. The brushing the teeth part, if you aggregate it, happens to be very important, as a matter of fact. But by exclusion, I did not mean to say that the other things were not important. And of course, the fact that we're using 4 barrels of water to make 1 barrel of oil in the tar sands is an egregious misuse of our most precious natural resource. And it is one which is not merely put into ponds, which could be somehow eventually recovered. A lot of that is injected directly into the earth, and we'll never see it again. And the measurable flow of the Athabasca River is down 40% from where it was, because that glacial melt is not happening there anymore. So we have to address that. It is to that kind of issue that we have to address the political will that's necessary. We have to get past the pushback, which is going to cost that industry and our province and each of us a lot. We have to do that. You asked another question, and I can't remember what the other aspect of it was.
What's the Senate going
to
do about it?
Well, what the Senate is doing about it is what the Senate always tries to do about it, which is to urge, as we have in that report to which I referred earlier, a number of things that can be done. I commend your attention to the report. You will see that brushing your teeth and the oil sands and lots of other things are talked about in it. We have to deal with our with the international issues as far as water is concerned. The difference in the way Montana deals with, you know, we're pretty efficient here. We use drip, drop, and quite efficient in this part of the country irrigation. In Montana, they do irrigation by flooding the fields. Well, that's not an efficient, manageable, sensible use of water. But it comes from the same Milk River, which winds its way back and forth. What the Senate does is to urge in reports like that the government to do the right thing. We're always urging that, while we know that incremental change is only going to go this far, we're always urging this in the hopes that we can drag them a little further. And when it comes to legislation, such as the Clean Air Act, which will be introduced, we're told, next week, the Senate, that can't become an act of Parliament until the Senate approves it. So the Senate will do its due diligence, as it does on every bill that comes forward from any source, and if it's a good idea, we'll pass it. If it's an idea that is good but needs modification, we will amend it, which we do more frequently than anybody knows. That was the number, the 72, that Phil Ralph was talking about. We amend a great many bills and send them back, and they're almost always approved, those amendments. And if it's egregiously bad, we will defeat it. That's what the Senate will do.
Any more questions on water? In the business section of the Daily Mail 2 days ago, there was an article suggesting that there were very well-organized corporate interests that wanted to gain bulk export of water from Canada.
Oh, that was the other question. Sorry.
To the United States. Would you like to tackle that one?
Yes, thank you. Thank you for reminding me, Chair.
Will you please?
NAFTA. We have not given away any water under NAFTA. The government of Canada, successive governments have determined not to give away water under NAFTA. And I don't know how successful our claim will be when it comes down to challenges under NAFTA, if they are made. They haven't been yet. But the claim of the government of Canada, the position of the government of Canada, is that water is not a commodity and is therefore not susceptible of the rules of treatment under NAFTA. It is a natural resource, and we treat it as a natural resource. Now, the unfortunate fact is that there are chinks in that, because we already have three utility services in Canada that supply water to American communities. One is in Point Roberts, one is in Southern Alberta, in Coutts and Sweetgrass, and the other one is somewhere down east. And so we're already exporting water, but as a service, as a utility service to the United States. And we will try to rest on the perception, the legal perception, that water is not a tradable commodity. It is a natural resource, and that's how we protect it. And that's why there is no law in Canada against the export of bulk water. Because if we were to make such a law, we would be admitting that it is a commodity. And if we admit that it's a commodity, it's susceptible of all the rules of NAFTA. But so far, nobody's asked.
Was there a question on water?
I understand from my sister who lives in Guelph.
Your name?
Oh, I'm Pat Greenlee. Oops, I followed this up. From my sister who lives in Guelph, that the bottled water company, and I can't remember the name of it, comes in there and takes water out of their reservoir, bottles it. It's an American company. They bottle it. They send it all over the states and Canada too. But we are exporting water as a commodity in the form of bottled water.
Right.
not Baltimore.
Well, Trevor's coming to say, in that article that I mentioned, there was a statement that in the context of the present Harper government, we need to think about. The statement was, what America wants, America gets from Canada. Would you comment about that in the context of water?
Senator Banks has asked for a bit of a rest. What America wants, America gets. Well, you know, they're a fascinating neighbor, the United States. We're well served many times by the relationship, and other times it's very frustrating for us. But I think it's an oversimplification to say that they always get what they want. We have heard Senator Banks say that in terms of missile defense, the official position of the government of Canada is that we are not a participant. An exercise of our sovereign right against their wish. We did not invade Iraq with the coalition led by the Americans. Another example of Canada standing up for its sovereign rights. We have many, many examples. We have a different value structure that drives a different decision-making process in our country, and I don't think have ever been afraid to stand up for our rights and to exercise our sovereignty. I've given you a couple of examples. We must be ever vigilant. They would like it to be otherwise. But so far, I think we have been able to establish a robust Canadian position on things that are important to us, hold to it. And I think for the most part, while it's been frustrating for the Americans, they've respected that.
Thank you.
I'm Trevor Page, and I too would like to express my thanks to all three of you for coming and talking to us and listening to our concerns. My question is actually for Senator Fairbairn, and I'd like to know her views on the utility of the Canadian Wheat Board and how she sees the debate on the Wheat Board proceeding in the coming months.
To start with the last first, I think you're going to see a rip-snorting debate. It's a curious thing that at the moment it is being handled in Ottawa. There is a special task force that has been set up on this issue, and all the members of the task force are in favor of change. The Wheat Board itself was invited to send somebody there, and the president of the Wheat Board, who at one point was one of its opponents and has since working with it, decided that it has considerable value, felt it wasn't appropriate to have somebody from the Wheat Board on that particular task force. I can remember when the Minister of Agriculture was here when we had our 100th anniversary celebration at the research center, and he had just come from Saskatchewan, where he had been part of a round table discussion on the Wheat Board, and it was a private round table the people there had been picked to come and have this discussion with him. I mentioned to him in passing at the event that we were at that there was a whole other view in Western Canada as well. And if one does believe in the democratic process that has seen members of the Wheat Board, the majority of them being elected by the farmers in recent years, and the election of those farmers has been consistently in favor of the Wheat Board. What are my views? At this point in time, I would go along with them. We are in a terrific pickle right now because of all the things that have happened with the WTO. It's hard to imagine how how it's going to pull itself together and deal with these issues after the last sort of collapse of recent weeks. We are left as a country without, in spite of all of our efforts, which have been profound, as I said in my earlier remarks, the European Community and the United States have not been stopped in their tracks or even close to their tracks. So here we are. My own view is, at this point in time, I think it would be a mistake to change the Protection of the Wheat Board. That's my view. It may not go down well here, but that's my view, and from a lot of the people that I have talked to in the traveling that I do around this area.
And now I'd like to thank the speakers on your behalf, not only just to say thank you, but to tell you that in a sense it's a historic moment. Two of the senators were appointed in the brief days before Mr. Trudeau left office. That's a fair while ago. Both of you were appointed in those dying days of a brilliant Prime Minister's work, and you're here today to tell us still what's happened since then and gain your perspective from that. And we're grateful for you coming. We're grateful to Diane King, whose leadership has made possible this day, and we appreciate that. I'd like to say to our senators and to others that the Council of Public Affairs is always interested in your recommendations for speakers and issues, both. And when you give those to any one of the moderators or to any executive of the Council of Public Affairs, we act on them.